Selling his tears, going far away, far away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames.
Freedom. How about y'all? Freedom, everybody. That was the theme yesterday at the DNC's primetime speeches. What a lineup it was. Got Mayor Pete Buttigieg. I mean, he's so gosh darn likable. You, of course, had Milwaukee's very own Cavalier Johnson, Mayor Cavalier Johnson, with a slice of the spotlight, if you will. A brief but memorable set of comments from Mayor Cavalier Johnson last night. And, of course, Oprah. Gee, Brian, turns out Oprah, she's kind of good at talking and things.
Sounds like it. And it's pretty cool because she's kind of like me. She represents both Milwaukee and Chicago. Although I didn't really...
Your Cubs hat on today.
They did not win, but they're playing this afternoon. They're playing right now, actually.
And then, of course, Coach Walls. I mean, these were great speeches. We'll take a listen.
You can sleep when you're dead, Maggie.
Yes, we can sleep when we're dead. The work remains. We have the ball. We are charging down the field. We're down by a field goal. We will sleep when we're dead. It is time to move forward.
Yeah. We are matriculating the ball down the field.
Yeah. Brian, you and I and our good friend Chris Casper were at the Green Mill last night as Tim Walls was finishing up his speech, and there I was with my ice-cold, well-earned martini, crying like a baby on a bar stool, watching the governor speak.
It was awesome. Shout-out to Nicole and Lauren. You guys are Laura, I believe. I always get Lauren and Laura messed up. Either way, the shots were fantastic. And
it was fabulous bartenders at the Green Mill.
And it was cool because they were like, you guys are from the DNC. Tell me more.
Yeah, they were so excited about it. I was walking through the Green Mill sort of dance floor bandstand area. Someone saw me with my creds on and they said, have you been at the DNC? What is it like, Maggie? And I said, it is a damn near religious experience every day, becoming more and more inspired. Brian, I do think one of our special guests may be wandering around there for us. Folks, I'm not even going to tell you who I've got lined up today because my head will explode. We have people double booked, but you know me. We will get everybody a shot on the mic. Somehow I will stitch it together. That's right. I think everybody was ready for Oprah to say, and you get a something, and you get a something. I was personally looking for Oprah to come out maybe with a little tongue-in-cheek and say, and you get a pardon, and you get a... Oh, wait, that would be the other team. That would be the other guy that gives away the pardons. But let's just jump right in here, Jess. I think we've got some pretty incredible sound. I liked one of Oprah's first laugh lines. Let's take a listen, Jess. This is Oprah talking about cat ladies. I can't imagine how that came up.
And if the place happens to belong to a childless cat lady, well, we try to get that cat out too.
Yeah, just a great line. I'm saying, waving to Lieutenant Governor of the state of Wisconsin, Sarah Rodriguez, as she walks by. She may very well join us. Many of the delegates, many of the elected officials dressed in suffragette white today. Lots of beautiful folks walking around in white. But I thought that was such a great line from Oprah last night. This was in reference to, again, the theme of caring for one another, and that, you know, when your neighbor's house is on fire, you don't ask them, Brian, what religion are you? What is your stance on tax policy? Those are not the things that come up when your neighbor's house is on fire. You don't ask them if they're childless cat ladies and they have no stake in the future. You just go help them because that's what Americans do. Speaking of an American who has served his country for a very long time in combat in Iraq, I'm really excited to have with me retired Colonel of the Army, West Point graduate, former U.S. Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security, John Tien. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, John. Thanks so much for making time.
Yeah, Maggie, thanks for having us. And thanks to really this great Midwest. I understand we're going out to some viewers or listeners in Wisconsin and Michigan. Is that right?
Yeah, all across the state of Wisconsin. We pick up a little of east Minnesota, a little bit of the Chicagoland area. And if you're really lucky and you're tuned in correctly, a wee bit of western Michigan as well. Welcome,
okay.
John.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thanks to all of
you. You know, the battleground states, the important states.
Yeah.
John, you served in the Biden administration. You served in the Obama administration. You had three combat tours in Iraq. You have helped with the G7 negotiations.
That's right.
What haven't you done, sir?
I've never dunked a basketball.
Okay, well, neither have I, though I can palm one if it's a ladies' basketball.
Oh, that's great. That's probably better than me.
I'm 6 feet tall, so I can actually, the ladies' basketball I can palm. I wanted to just dive right in there and ask you, I myself served in government for nearly 15 years, mm-hmm. and I used to call myself proud to be a bureaucrat. Mm-hmm. I'm a subject matter expert. I have something to share with elected officials to help them make the best decisions they can.
Right.
You've commanded troops. You've been in an advisory capacity, a leadership capacity, a negotiating capacity. Here's what I wanted to ask you,
right.
John. How important is it to have competent experts and people that lead with honor and dignity throughout government, not just in the very highest office, but throughout these critical positions, both in our armed services, in our security apparatus, but also across the administrative departments of the executive branch?
You know, Maggie, I appreciate that question. Number one, it's a question I want to answer. But number two, it really gives me a chance to talk about the great civil servants
yes.
in the Department of Homeland Security. I was the Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security, as you said. It's the third largest federal department in the United States government. 250,000 great Americans, all of whom raised their right hand, like a lot of state, I think, oaths of office,
yep.
local folks as well, that raise your right hand, just like we did in the military, to support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Maggie, and you know what? We tend to give a lot of credit. I think it's appropriate to folks like J.D. Vance, Governor Walz, myself, Sergeant Major Estrada, right? You know, all these other different folks and everything. And we should be giving that same amount of respect to bureaucrats, to civil servants. And out of those 250,000, we had the Biden administration or Trump administration has this tiny layer of policymakers. And that's how it should be.
Yes.
That's the way the constitutional framers set it up. It's about 100 political appointees, Department of Homeland Security. Those civil servants, on day one, I walked in, and there was somebody who was appointed during the Trump administration. His name is, he didn't say, hey, John, I want to give you, give me credit on the Maggie show.
Yes. Right?
You know, talk to Wisconsin
yes.
about him. But it's a fact. His name is Tex Aulis. He was a Marine. He's a fixed-wing pilot, and he served at the head of the Secret Service. And now he's the acting undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security for Management. And Tex Aulis, even though he's a Trump by the Trump administration, mm-hmm. I looked at him and said, look, Tex, I don't know that much about DHS. I've been a chief operating officer before, but I'm going to rely on your advice and good counsel on programs that are going to make things safer for the United States of America and things that are better for the Department of Homeland Security. And that's all I ask of you. And for two and a half years, that's what he did.
Yes.
And Secretary Mayorkas, at the very end, gave him the highest level internal department award and asked Mr. Aulis, Major General retired Tex Aulis, to stay on until the end of the administration. That's the kind of civil servants that we need.
Yes. What you're saying there, if I can summarize, John, is it's nonpartisan. It's in good faith. People try their gosh darn hardest,
mm-hmm.
and they swear an oath to the very same Constitution, both state and federal, that you swear to as someone who served in the armed services. This is my experience as well. I tell people this as many times as I possibly can on my show, mm-hmm. that 99.999% of the people that I have encountered in public service are there trying to do the best job that they can, that they respect the people who place the trust in them to do the best that they can.
That's right.
And to do it without fear or favor and without partisan rancor. That is the central functioning of government. That's the way we want it. I got to ask the question then, when you read a document or read the summaries, because who wants to read 892 pages of Project 2025, yeah, it's a little scary.
I mean,
wiping out civil service and basically putting in place of that political litmus testing and loyalty testing, this does not make government work better, would it?
It does not. And, you know, it's interesting. The Trump Vance administration is trying to distance themselves from Project 2025 and saying, we don't know what's going on. Well, look, the facts are, like, you know, the Trump Vance team always like to talk about facts. It feels more like fabrication, quite honestly. But I'll give you this one fact. I think it's about 150 former Trump administration officials who are on Project 2025. The guy who led it, you know, wrote a book, who wrote the foreword, J.D. Vance.
Right.
It's coming largely sponsored by the Heritage Foundation, which last time I looked was effectively a Republican think tank. And a pretty, pretty traditional conservative
used
one
to
as
be,
well.
At least,
it
right?
used to be, right. Now, all of a sudden, they're like, I don't know. Are we associated with the Republican Party?
Yeah, the executive director of the Heritage Foundation flying Trump around in the private plane. I mean, like, these are inextricably intertwined organizations, the current GOP and Project 2025 and the Heritage Foundation.
And the reason I let off that whole sort of like their pushback on Project 2025 is just absurd because, A, what all the things I just said. But in particular, let's talk about what you're talking about is this Trump Vance thing called Schedule F.
Yes.
Right? They want to come in and they're like, well, we don't know anything about Project 2025. I'm not even going to honor that with a comment now. But what I will say is at the very end of the Trump administration, they try to put in Schedule F.
Tell people what Schedule F is. So, we got about a minute left.
Okay, Schedule F, sorry to be a little bit of a policy wonk, but effectively what they wanted to do is say, if we think that you were in any kind of a policy position and without merit, we can fire you.
Yes.
Not just like reassign you, but just fire you.
Fire you flat out,
flat
without
out,
cause.
Without cause, no rights. We don't do that in the private sector. I was in there for a long time. So it is putting a fear into the career of civil servants. And these are folks who raise their right hand to support and defend the Constitution. And they are hyper competent, quite honestly, more competent than me. But what I owed and what Harris Walz will owe is the opportunity to set the policy and the strategic direction for the United States of America. And we are a representative government. And I think that's what they'll do. Because I think that's what's going to happen. I know that's what's going to happen. And by the way, what did Coach Wall say last night? You write a playbook, you're going to follow it. That's what Project 2025 is all about.
That's retired Army Colonel John Tien. Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network's special coverage of the DNC 2024. My big thanks to retired Army Colonel, West Point graduate, three combat tour veteran of the Iraq conflict, former Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security, John Tien. Thanks so much, John. But it is now time for the Marcy Minute at the DNC. Today at the DNC with David, two of my very good friends and former bosses from Milwaukee County, David Crowley, County Executive of Milwaukee County. We'll start with you, David. How is your last and final day at the DNC kicking off?
Well, for those who know, every day is a good day. But being here for the last day of the DNC has just been phenomenal. Last night, we had a great time, you know, hearing from Governor Walz himself and just really seeing him really inspire the crowd. And now, you know, being able to go to the convention, going to the United Center to see our Madam Vice President accept the nomination for the presidency, one, is historic within itself. But I'm really looking forward to everything that is happening, continuing to build with many members of the Democratic Party from all across the country. And at the end of the day, just getting my cup refilled and making sure that we continue to bring the enthusiasm that we need to bring to make sure that we can get Kamala and Tim Walz over the hump this upcoming November.
Yeah, it's going to be a really exciting night. David, I hope you have your name on a chair, because if I thought it was packed Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, today is going to be off the charts. Madam Chairwoman Marcelia Nicholson, Milwaukee County Board Chairwoman, what are you looking forward to on this, your last and final day at the DNC here in Chicago?
First of all, hello, Maggie. Hey, David. Hello, listeners. I echo David. The energy has just been phenomenal. Today is a bit bittersweet. You know, the connections I've been able to make with fellow Wisconsinites and folks all across the country in our quest to elect our United States MVP, Madam Vice President, has just been amazing. And I look forward to getting back home, putting boots on the ground, and make sure she gets elected on November 5th. We're just 74 days in a wake-up, as Governor Westmore would say, until we cast that vote to make her the first Black woman, first Asian woman, President of the United States of America. Tonight, I'm looking forward to hearing her accept that nomination. I imagine we will learn a bit more about her journey throughout time in office and what led her to this presidential nomination. And I just look forward to the crowd going crazy. And,
yes.
You know, it's been so historic, and you can feel it down to your bones how meaningful this all is across the country.
Excuse me, Madam Chairwoman, I'll start with you and then I'll ask you, Mr. County Executive, but I'll start with you, Marcelia. I just hit on a guest, John Tien. He's served in many capacities across government at the federal level. He's a veteran. And what we were focusing in on is the importance of the rank and file that make up civil servants and civil servants in government. I worked for you, I worked for David, and I had a team of 25 legal professionals, all civil servants to a one, that worked for me while I was in government. How important do you know keeping civil service protections in place so that we are promoting based on merit, rewarding based on merit within government, within the administration of government? How important do you know that to be, Madam Chairwoman, based on your experience? You've served for a long time as an elected official.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And civil servants really are the backbone of our government. And it's so important that we keep that spirit of public service, because it's really what makes sure that the goals and the dreams and the aspirations of our constituents are realized. Our public servants, you know, they're responsible for so much. They help, you know, develop our policies. They help to implement our policies. They help to oversee the needs and the services that everyone cares about and needs to thrive in their communities. And so I'm just happy, Maggie, that you had a fellow civil servant on the show that folks can learn more about that role. And I guess while you're listening, I would just, you know, encourage folks who feel that need, that call to civil service, to please get involved. Because really, you know, someone like me, I thought, coming from where I came from, the poor zip code in the state, that I wasn't qualified to serve in this capacity. I've been able to meet so many folks across the county, across other governmental jurisdictions, who just given that chance, that opportunity to do what they love, to serve people that they love and care about, makes the world of a difference.
Yes, indeed. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, your state, or your local municipal government, Mr. County Executive. Project 2025 basically proposes to gut civil service as we know it in the federal government and put in place loyalists. I don't want people serving throughout government that their primary qualification for the job is political loyalty. I want folks that are good at the jobs. Am I not right, Mr. County Executive?
Absolutely. I mean, you are absolutely right. I mean, let's be very clear. You know, civil service positions, those folks who work in those civil service positions, they don't work particularly for that elected official. They work for the people. And their job is to protect the people of whoever they're representing. In this case, we're talking about the people of the United States. And so, you know, as an elected official, my job is to continue to make sure that I'm doing good by the people that I represent. And I, quite frankly, when I look at Trump's presidency, it's really about how do he put people in position who's going to serve him and his agenda only. And when we compare Project 2025 agenda to the agenda of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, there's a stark difference, because Project 2025 doesn't put people first. It's putting corporate greed first. It is putting the polluting of our air first. It is putting all the things that do not make America great first, and allowing Donald Trump to be really honed in his power for himself. And so our civil service leaders, our bureaucrats who are in office at all levels of government, that's who are protecting not only our government, but they're protecting the American people every single day. And so when I look at the fact that they're trying to get rid of the particularly Schedule S, no matter how wonky it may be, we have to pay attention to this. We have to pay attention to the policies that are on the table, because quite frankly, these are the policies that can make a hell of a difference in our lives every single day, and in our children's lives.
Yes. Getting rid of Schedule F scares the bejiggers out of me. Thank you, Mr. County Executive. That was Today at the DNC with David Crowley. I know you got a place to go. Madam Chairwoman, I'm going to ask you to hang on one more second, because I got to share with all the listeners out there this little story. You and I and a couple of our close friends sat in my living room together on the day that it was announced that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris had won the White House for the American people. And you and I took photos standing next to my television with Kamala Harris. Madam Chairwoman, my wish for you this afternoon is that you stand on the floor with Kamala Harris, that you get to lend your voice with hers, and that her victory is also partially your victory, as it is my victory, as it will be a victory for every American. Have a great last day at the DNC, Madam Chairwoman.
Thank you, Maggie. Thank you so much.
All right, y'all, keep it locked. We have more special guests coming up here on the last day of the DNC on the Maggie Dawn Show. You're listening to Civic Media Radio Network. It's popping here at the United Center. Don't miss a minute, folks. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network's special DNC coverage, coming to you live from downtown Chicago at the United Center. And I'm really kind of fangirl, stupid excited to be joined right now by Congressman from Michigan, Dan Kildee. Thank you so much for being here, Dan.
Thank you.
You represent the 8th CD.
Yep.
Which includes Flint, Michigan.
My hometown.
Yes. You were born and raised in Flint.
Yep.
You ran for basically a school board when you were 18.
18 years old. That was more than 10 years ago.
More than 10.
47 years ago, I was elected to my board of education.
So you have been doing this for a long time. You served on a board of commissioners for a county, correct?
Right.
And we were just sharing before you popped up, we got on air, Dan, that I myself have worked in local government, worked for a congressman back in the day, worked on the Hill. So it's a real personal pleasure to have you.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for making time. Let's just jump right into it. Flint has had an incredible challenge providing its citizens and residents with clean water. Milwaukee, different cause, but same tragic result. We still struggle with lead waters and ensuring that every single child and every single family in the city of Milwaukee has clean water every day that they can rely on. What's it been like coming? You were elected in 23. You've been serving, trying to address this issue. Now, granted, there were decisions made a long time ago that you weren't responsible
for.
But that doesn't matter. You get elected and people look to you for solutions.
Absolutely. When you're in these offices, people don't want to hear reasons that you can't help or reasons that it wasn't your fault. They want to know that you've got their back. You know, so I was elected 12 years ago. Immediately, within a couple of years, the Flint water crisis came up. And it was at that moment, it was sort of a clarifying moment in a lot of ways. Because you never really have any doubt that you can do good in these jobs. But there's this moment that occurs when you realize, I know exactly why I'm here. Mm. I have to get help for my community because I look around and there's nobody else that represents this district in Congress. There's nobody that represents Flint except me, and it's on me. Now, the reason I was able to succeed is that I was able to persuade colleagues on both sides of the aisle that we needed to get this done. I had some great allies. One of them was Gwen Moore.
Yeah.
Gwen, with whom I continue to serve, she sits right next to me on the Ways and Means Committee. And we've talked about water issues. We've talked about the similarities between my home community. Milwaukee's a much larger place. But let's face it, a lot of these older industrial cities face these challenges.
These same exact challenges.
Yeah, for sure.
And thanks for correcting me. You were reelected in 23. Yes. You've been a congressperson for
12 years.
A dozen blissful years. Yes.
12 long years.
Long years. But this fundamental idea that when people are in need, especially when it's such an imminent threat to public health, safety, and welfare, you've got to be able to have difficult conversations and make compromise and forge collaborative relationships with people from the other party.
For sure.
This used to be sort of the presumption of elected officials. Voters expected that.
Yep.
It seems like it's gotten harder and harder to do. I largely attribute it to gerrymandering, which, you know, sort of disincentivizes compromise and collaboration. So you worked across the aisle. What made it possible, even in these fractured political times, to do that, Dan?
Well, you know, it's interesting you ask the question, because I wonder now, if the Flint water crisis would have occurred in 2024 as opposed to 2015,
yes,
whether we would have been able to navigate the current political environment. Because as hard as it was then, and it was hard, it's gotten worse in many ways.
Yes.
And because I think there are more members of Congress who take this sort of performative approach and really are not fixed on actually making progress and solving a problem. But with the exception of my earlier joke off air about loving the sound of my own voice, there are members of Congress whose entire purpose for service is to hear the beautiful music of the sound of their own voice and not really be that concerned with actually delivering something.
They're Ovid's narcissists, no doubt.
Yeah.
It's funny that you even use the word performative, Congressman, because I talk about performative politics all the time. I have two interrelated definitions. I'm not talking about the drama of politics. Politics is dramatic.
It is.
It is theatrical. We're at a large production of the biggest theatrical production that a political party can put on. I'm not talking about that element of it. I'm talking about performativeness, where an action or a refusal to act is undertaken purely for the raw exercise of power, because you can and your score settling and it doesn't matter the merits of the thing. That's one of my two definitions. We've seen a lot of that.
Right.
The other definition is you're doing it simply to raise your personal brand exposure, what have you, to see your face in the media, to hear your voice, as you put it. That is what I call performative politics.
Right.
And when those two things intersect, every single American and every single person I've ever talked to goes, that's gross, and this is what I hate about politics.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. There's one element that connects to what you're saying, and it's this this notion that members, in my case, it's members of Congress, but it's people in this space.
Yep.
That they can justify the lack of progress by celebrating their righteousness.
Yes.
And this sort of obsession with righteousness, which, when you think about it, they congratulate themselves about how right they are, having done nothing to advance the interests of the people that they profess to love so much. And so what does that mean? It means the true successful public servant has a sense of what is right, but also understands that none of that means anything to somebody in Milwaukee struggling to make ends meet unless I do something that actually improves their circumstance. They don't get any benefit from me being their best advocate if my advocacy does not put...
yields nothing.
Absolutely nothing. And so what does that mean? That means we have to make the sacrifice of compromise in order to do the things that we know are important for the people that we work for, even if that means having to have a hard conversation with those very same people and say, I did everything I could to move us as far as I could, and I'll keep trying, but I can't give you everything that you need or want or should have right now, because that's just not in the cards. There are too many people who are unwilling to have that difficult conversation. My favorite professor.
Can I just want to interrupt you. For,
yeah.
Thank you for that, Dan. That is it, right? That is it, that it has to be more important, that the results have to matter more than the rhetoric.
For sure.
That service to others and getting things done for others has to come before self-congratulation.
Yeah.
Right? I couldn't, like, thank you so much. I talk about this all the time.
Well, I'm glad you do. I'm glad you do. And keep doing it.
Yes,
because
we
need
to.
More people who think about it that way. I came to understand that through experience and through a really good teacher who taught me this really one phrase that I'll let you have. Leadership is the act of disappointing your own supporters at a rate they can absorb. You've got to tell people the hard things. You got to tell people things they don't want to hear. Not because it's fun, because it's true. And then you can, then you have the space to actually try to make some progress, to actually do something. That even if they're not going to clap when you walk down the street, you have to take the satisfaction that you did something that was important for them. You have to know that. Popularity in politics is not the same as success in political leadership.
In governing,
yeah,
right? You know, what is it? Campaigning is poetry and governing is prose.
Yeah, that's true.
It's so dry. I have a small story to share with you on this very point. I once promised a mayor, I was making a proposal, and I said, listen, if this goes badly, I'll resign or you can fire me publicly. If it goes well, you can take absolutely all the credit, right. Take a huge victory lap. Right. And I saw him relax because I knew, you know, I was challenged that that's what it took, right? I wished he just did it on the merits of the thing. But I often say, because I worked in a capacity where I was serving and advising elected officials, I'd say to my staff, hey, listen, understand sometimes what the motivations are. And maybe I don't even need to put it in such transactional terms. The pressures that elected officials face. But this... My new friend, Congressman Dan.
That's right.
Hildy, leadership is the act of disappointing your own supporters at a rate they can't absorb.
I didn't invent the concept, but I have put it in practice. I try to.
Let's give a shout out. What was the professor's name?
Professor Marty Linsky at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. Fantastic guy.
Listen, Professor Marty, you got any more knowledge bombs to drop on us? My name is Maggie Dawn. Just call us up. We're on the Civic Media Radio Network. You are also, I noticed, I just thought I could touch on this a bit with you. You're truly a product of Michigan education.
Yeah.
And this was another point of commonality. I went to a small Catholic grade school. I then went to a big urban magnet high school. I went to Marquette University on an academic scholarship. And then I went to the University of Wisconsin for law school. How important is public education and making sure that we're reaching each and every child in our communities?
It's the great equalizer.
Yes.
I mean, if we actually acted upon our beliefs, I've heard every politician in the history of politics say that our children are our most precious commodity or resource, whatever you want to call it, and that education is paramount. Words.
Yep.
Just a bunch of words. Unless, and we shouldn't be wedded to any particular model, but the product has to be that we're going to give every child every tool to be the best version of themselves possible. And the notion that we continue to go on the cheap on that question is not only morally questionable, but it's economically ridiculous.
Yes.
The trajectory of a life
it's
of
cutting
a child,
off our nose to spite our face as a society.
And this kind of even goes to the way we measure the cost and benefit of things. You know, the whole cost-benefit analysis that Congress enters into is to look at the cost of something and the return on that expenditure over 10 years. We call it the 10-year window. It's something that the Congressional Budget Office uses. And what I've been proposing is, I don't mind using a 10-year window. Let's just use the right 10 years. That if we invest
in...
It's
a trailing 10 years. Right?
Yeah.
Like, how are
if
we doing this?
Preschool, we ought to measure the effect of preschool, not starting at age 4, but at age 24.
Yes.
If you can invest in that child, give them a better launch pad, the distance they will travel by the time they're 24 years old is significantly greater. Yes. So I don't mind using metrics. Let's just use the right metrics.
Good metrics. You put crap data in, results come out,
no
right?
Question.
Like, it's got to be good data. As an economist, that's the entire shooting match. And one of the things that freaks me out the most is Project 2025. It's like, let's get rid of Head Start.
Right.
What are you even talking?
It's just insane.
It's just stupid.
It doesn't accomplish what they purport it to accomplish.
Correct.
It doesn't save us any money.
Like, it will cost us more.
Even if they decided that saving money is okay on the backs of kids. Which I don't buy that anyway.
Right, premise.
but let's just, for the argument's sake, accept the premise that we need to rein in spending. That means we need to figure out how to be wise when it comes to the use of our dollars.
Head Start's wise.
Smart. Effective. Long-term impact is tremendous. I was originally a social worker many, many years ago, like forever ago, working with the most at-risk kids. These were the kids who were the lucky ones.
Yeah.
They got caught up in the system and got the help they needed.
Yeah.
And we were able to relaunch that trajectory. But I often thought to myself, what would have happened if we had just started with those kids a few years earlier? Life would have been better for them. The cost to society. You're an economist?
Yes,
this is internalizing the externalities.
Talk about externalities.
That's what we
got to
do.
The time. Will you come back and talk with
Happy
me again
to.
Sometime, Congressman?
Anytime. Apparently I'll even come to Milwaukee.
Oh, fabulous. We'll do a great fish fry with you.
That'd be great.
Michigan Congressman, the 8th CD, Dan Kildee. It really was an absolute pleasure,
you.
Sir. Have a wonderful DNC.
I'll do it.
Don't go anywhere, folks. We got more special guests coming up next. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network's special live coverage of the 2022 for DNC here from the United Center in Chicago. We'll be right back. I'm so addicted to the love in the room, in the convention center. I'm addicted to the love at the DNC 2024. I don't know about you folks, but I got big love from my very last guest, Congressman Dan Kildee of the 8th CD in Michigan. Brian, isn't it nice when elected officials say, like, the obvious good things?
And that guy, you know, coming from Flint, you're not, you got a nice and wonderful bunch of problems you got to walk into there. But it was cool. I did get to brag a little bit because I do have my own state championship football ring from Michigan because I went to high school there. So I got a giant ring that fits my sausage fingers, which is pretty darn cool.
Very cool. Again, my thanks to Congressman Dan Kildee, the 8th CD in Michigan. Here's his line again, folks. Leadership is the act of disappointing your own supporters at a rate they can't absorb. Wow, that's going to be my little knowledge bomb from the DNC. Really excited and very humbled to be joined by Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor, looking beautiful and glowing in white this afternoon, Sarah Rodriguez. Thanks so much for being here again.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're dressed in white. I am sharing with a lot of people that there is a sea of white, a mm-hmm. beautiful opening, a lightness, a brightness, but also, of course, the color of suffragettes.
Yep.
It's going to be a sea of white on the floor, is it not?
It is going to be a sea of white on the floor, which is so exciting. You know, I brought my kids here to
yes.
the convention as well because it is a historic moment, right? So my daughter's 15, my son is 17, and I was saying, you have to be here to see this, because this is going to be the next president of the United
Witnessing
States.
Witnessing history.
First female president, first female African-American president, first female Indian-American president.
Yes.
These are all just amazing milestones. And even though they're 15 and 17 and, you know, they're teenagers, I will tell you that they have been riveted to the conversations, all of the different speeches. They have not asked to leave once to do anything. They have been watching.
Get out of here.
I know, because it's this much fun.
Yes.
This is what this convention is. It has been joyful and exciting and fun that it even has kept a 15 and 17-year-old's attention. So I feel like
something.
That is high praise for the convention.
It truly is. What you gave a bit of a speech.
Yes.
Our wonderful mayor, Cavalier Johnson, did yesterday. What's that like, Sarah, getting up in front of a room of that many people?
I'm not going to lie. It was terrifying. It absolutely was.
Well, good on you for
I'm not going to lie. Anybody who tells you they're not a little scared to go out on that stage is absolutely lying. I don't care how many times you do it. It is nerve-wracking to get in front of all of those people. And you don't want to make a mistake, right? You don't want to do that. But it was also fun.
Oh, you nailed it, though.
Oh, thank you so much. But it was. It was fun. It was fun to talk about these things. It was, you know, it's coming from your heart to say, look, healthcare is important. I'm a nurse. I know this. I know the best candidate for what I believe in to be a healthy community is going to be the Harris-Walz ticket.
Yes.
So it wasn't hard for me to say. It wasn't hard for me to do. Little nerve-wracking, but so excited and just, you know, so grateful that I got to be up there and to represent Wisconsin, having the mayor represent Wisconsin. I know we're going to have probably another person representing Wisconsin tonight.
Yes, indeed. Very exciting. I just want to say as a woman who's always cared really deeply about politics, thanks for doing us all proud, Sarah.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun on a personal level to watch you do your thing, girl. It's like, get it, yeah! And you were, again, excellent. What has been, if you've got maybe one or two favorite moments so far that really will stick with you, or
an image
that really stands out?
You know, I'm going to give props to Georgia and Lil Jon. They really showed us all up on the roll call vote. That was pretty, pretty cool. Oprah Winfrey coming out, that was a surprise. We didn't know about that ahead of time. That was really neat. Oh, John Legend, you know, I mean, just everybody who was there, it was just fantastic. And what is on stage is truly represents America. And that's what we saw.
Yes.
We saw different viewpoints from some of even our more conservative members of the party all the way to our most liberal members of the party. And there were no divisions.
Mm-hmm.
We are together. We are united. We are moving forward.
Yes.
And that is in comparison to the Trump party. I don't even know if I want to call them the Republican party.
Nope, it's the MAGA cult.
I think that's party.
Fine. Yes,
we can
MAGA
call
party.
It that.
Yes.
They're all about division. They're all about anger and retribution. And that's what you saw on that stage, you know, in Milwaukee and the RNC. And so it was just such an enormous contrast to be able to look at what they presented in Milwaukee and what we are presenting here, which is light and joy and just excitement to be able to move forward. And I'm certainly proud to be part of this party. I'm certainly proud to be part of this movement. And I am looking forward to Wisconsin, making sure we get her across that finish line, as well as Senator Baldwin. And we have new maps in Wisconsin.
I know. So excited. First CD, third CD, eighth CD. Woo! Let's
and the
do
state
it.
Senate and
I
the
know.
State assembly has new maps.
Get the Wisconsin government back to where it
let's
reflects Wisconsinites.
Get back to work. And, you know, and I was talking on the other time on the radio, you know, we've had gerrymandered maps for over 10 years.
Yes.
And when you think about gerrymandered maps, it's not just about the power, right? It's about being able to work across the aisle. When you do not have purple districts, when you have deep blue districts and deep red districts, there is a disincentive to work together.
Of course. And there's an incentive to get more extreme.
There's because you're
just
worried about
this
a
with
primary.
Congressman Kildee. Yes, exactly that.
Mm-hmm. You're worried about a primary to your left or to your right. And so there's that disincentive to work together. And when I speak to Wisconsinites, and I live in Waukesha County, as you may know, which is a pretty red county, so I have the privilege of speaking to people.
Getting purpler.
It is getting purpler. All across the political spectrum, they just want us to work together. They're so tired of the divisiveness. They are so tired of it. They just want us to work together. So if we structurally have created a problem like this, you know, that is a huge issue for Wisconsin, and we've fixed it. So now these maps are going to be more equal, more purple.
That is Lieutenant Governor of this great state of Wisconsin. Forward!
Yay!
Sarah Rodriguez, thanks so much for making time. I hope you and your family have an absolutely inspired rest of the DNC. And, of course, you look gorgeous in white.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for making us all proud. Again, that's Sarah Rodriguez, Lieutenant Governor of the great state of Wisconsin. We're here at the very last day of the DNC. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to take a breath, and we'll be right back with more special guests. Don't go anywhere.